Hello, everybody. Welcome to your Liverpool FC podcast. I'm Andy Kelly. I'm joined by James Pearce. I'm joined by Christian Walsh and Paul Philbin today. First of all, an apology. We should have done this after Southampton on last Wednesday, when we'd all be very positive and you'd all be feeling brilliant about the team. But we delayed, and obviously we've had Newcastle in between. So we're here to talk about both those games. Look forward to Sion and West Brom coming up in the next few days. We're going to start at Southampton, start on a positive note, Piercy. You made the long journey down to St Mary's, and a much changed Liverpool team, a terrible start, but you know, really a really clinical performance, wasn't it?
Certainly was, yeah. It was an amazing night, really, because for the first 15-20 minutes, Liverpool were all over the shop. You know, obviously a nightmare start, conceding after, was it 40 seconds? Could easily have got worse after that, and crying out for a bit of inspiration just to get them going, and Daniel Sturridge provided it. Two clinical finishes in the space of 4 minutes, just absolutely transformed that game. And and then the last hour was just absolutely emphatic. It was I think it was almost just as remarkable what Liverpool did to Southampton as what they'd done to Man City a few weeks before. Obviously, great to see Divock Origi. You know, the night that his Liverpool career really came to life. With the hat trick, again, he's probably, became the latest in a long line of players to have benefited from Klopp's kind of magic dust in terms of the transformation that's been in him. It was just a special night all round, because when you think that Klopp made six changes, and that was a virtually full strength Southampton team that got humiliated on their own ground.
Christian, I mean, I have to say, I was just astonished to see Divock Origi in the starting lineup, just because he's, a hard away cup quarter final. I never thought that was the sort of game that maybe Klopp would have fancied putting him in on. But that's why he earns the big dollars, and that everybody loves him. He's made a big decision there, and most of his big decisions are paying off, aren't they?
Yeah, it was a very big call. But I think what Origi does give you is that little bit of flexibility on the front line. He can play up front, but he can also drift out wide. People don't really know yet what he really is. The assumption is that he'll become a central striker eventually, and that's where he's played for Belgium, certainly. But at Lille, he was a bit more out wide. He uses his pace, opens up his legs, that sort of player. So I think he looked at Southampton, I think he looked at their back too, and he thought, well, what the one thing they will struggle with is probably movement. So it was a big call to include them, but ultimately it was the right one. I mean, the big thing about that is that, the confidence he'll take from that, and I know obviously he only got, 10, 15 off the bench at Newcastle, but the confidence he'll have from that Southampton game, those 90 minutes, is huge. He's had chances to announce himself in this Liverpool team under Rodgers. You think about, even under Klopp, he missed a couple of chances at home to Sion under Rodgers. Kloppy at the bar in his first game. I mean, what a statement that would have been if he would have been the first to score a goal for Jurgen Klopp's Liverpool. But I think more than just the goals as well, it was the purpose he showed. It was the power. It was the pace. It was just a really complete performance, a really mature performance from someone who's only 20, still 20, yeah. Maybe 21. It just throws his name into the hat a little bit, because up until that point, I suppose, Roberto Firmino was almost the default fourth choice striker. Everyone had forgotten about Origi. He wasn't even on the bench against Chelsea. He was kept at Melwood to train more and watch how things happened against Chelsea rather than be on the bench and maybe make an impact. So, it's quite a reversal of fortune for him, and it just gives Klopp that extra option. Whether it's a case of he's got too many options now and he needs to figure out a way how to fit them all in, because you could certainly argue he was very unlucky not to be in the Newcastle team. I know we'll move on to the game of St James's, but you score a hat-trick on Wednesday and you're back on the bench Sunday. It was also a big call. So, it's all right for Origi at the minute, and it's something to be positive about, I suppose, certainly, and hopefully he can kick on from here.
Paul, he's always had the raw, looked like he's had the raw physicality and sort of speed to be a good striker, Origi. What he hasn't looked like he had is that sort of natural sort of striker's instincts at knowing where to go. And that's why the goal I really loved from him against Southampton was the third one, which was just a nice little bit of movement, a simple cross, a very good cross, but and he's on the end of it and tucks it away with a minimum of force. And Brad Smith, who put that cross in, you were over at watching him in the under-21s a few days before when he appeared and played a good half against Manchester United. And he looked sharp there, but he's sort of arrived back from nowhere, hasn't he?
He certainly has. And against Manchester United, Smith put in a fairly few good balls. And that's something we've missed on the left-hand side, because Moreno going forward is good to a point, and then his delivery is just not there. It was nice to see deliveries coming in from the left, and obviously if the good ball goes into the box and you've got a striker of Origi's height, there's always going to be chances there, and Origi did take his goal well.
It is one of the things. Moreno's been probably one of the best players of the season, you'd think, in terms of, you know, he's been virtually a mainstay down that left, hasn't he? He's done some decent defensive work for a player who's generally regarded as not being brilliant defensively, but he does need to work on that sort of. We need more from him in a. Yeah, obviously, we need. You know, he scored or nearly scored against Southampton with the shot, but we do need better delivery from him from that side, don't we? Going forward.
Yeah, that. I think so. And to be honest, I'm still not convinced about him defensively either. I think, you know, too often. I think he has improved this season defensively, but he still gets caught out too often. I think positionally he still isn't great, and you're right, you know, I think for someone who is regarded as an attacking left back, he should be creating more and being more of a threat in the final third. And obviously he was massively unfortunate that we're not sat here talking about one of the goals of the season at St James's Park last weekend with the volley he put away, wrongly flagged up for offside, but you know that is what Liverpool should be getting more from him, because you know he does have that ability. And you know, I think one thing with Moreno as well, probably it was important that Brad Smith came on and contributed like he did, because it is one area of the squad where Liverpool are very light. You know, I think both fullback positions, obviously Flanagan not due back till early in the new year, obviously massive blow losing Joe Gomez for the season. So Klein and Moreno have played a hell of a lot of football already, and with the schedule that Liverpool have got in December and January, I think Brad Smith and Conor Randall are both going to be needed, because you can't expect Moreno and Klein to play every game.
So interesting about Moreno, who's actually created up until the Newcastle game, so I don't know the recent stats, but up until the Newcastle game, he was the second most creative player in the Liverpool team in the league this season.
Interesting.
But that for me just highlights how important it is that he gets better on the ball, because he's creating them, but there could be so many more. You know, you think about the times that he gets the ball out wide and just fires across, overhits it behind, or underhits it, or you know, whatever. The fact that he's I don't know the exact figure, but the fact that he's second only behind, I think it's probably Coutinho, in terms of creating chances for Liverpool this season, shows that he's getting in the right positions. His final ball just needs a lot of work.
Yeah, it does. I mean, I think he ends up in those positions a lot because of teams who defend narrow and deep at Anfield. And to a certain extent, and to be fair to him, it is difficult to find a ball when you've got, you know, if everyone's has dropped back and you've got a packed penalty area and everything else. But I do think, you know, his current method is hit it as hard as possible across the goal mouth, and for a professional footballer, there's got to be a better method than that for me, I think. Just sort of to move on from Southampton, but just leave it with the draw, really, Paul. One thing I thought, just instinctively and emotionally when the draw was coming up, was how things have changed in that. I have a feeling that I would probably have looked at the potential draw and think, oh, I don't want to get City probably or whatever, maybe, 6 months ago. But I have to say, when the draw was coming up, I really didn't care who we got, because I sort of felt, especially after watching the display last Wednesday, that, you know, if we get Everton, we can beat them over two games. Stoke, yeah, if it was a one-off at the Britannia, you might be a bit worried, but over two games, we'll beat them. And obviously, we've got plenty of recent history with City, which suggests we can go there and win, and we'd be confident against anyone at Anfield. So it did feel like, you know, a draw where, you know, there wasn't going to be too bad a draw, whatever it was.
Oh, you wouldn't have been disappointed with any team that you got, really. And Klopp, on over two legs, has proved himself. So that's a big plus for Liverpool. And Stoke probably the most favourable draw, because Merseyside derbies, anything can happen. City, they will want to get one back on us. But yeah, anyone would have done. If we were going into it under Rodgers against Stoke, I wouldn't fancy us to go through, because I don't think Rodgers had the tactical nous to play a game over two legs, whereas Klopp will, and should be okay, and we should be looking forward to Wembley in February.
It's funny how it changes, though, isn't it? Because, I mean, you know, let's go back 6 months even. Stoke was one of Liverpool's bogey teams. They still probably are, for all intents and purposes. I know Coutinho scored that wonder strike on the opening day, but, you know, Stoke isn't going to be an easy game either. I think because the other two options were City and Everton,
yeah,
everyone breathed a sigh of relief. Liverpool would have no doubt been happy with Stoke, but it's still the Britannia Stadium where they lost 6-1 a couple of months ago, albeit under a different regime or whatnot. Still a stadium that they go to often and lose 3-1, 2-0, 1-0. They've had a load of poor results there in the past. So, you know, Klopp's got his work cut out. You know, I can't see why they wouldn't go through, to be honest, over the two legs. But, you know, you're watching that City game.
They're playing well, aren't they?
The Stoke City game, you're watching it and you're thinking, well, maybe Liverpool's draw isn't as easy, maybe Everton's isn't as hard.
You're actually looking forward to it. I haven't seen their performance against it as a game of football, to be honest with you, with Shaqiri and Arnautovic playing Bojan. Well for them, Bojan. You know, that could be a really attractive game.
Ironically, that plays into Liverpool's hands a little bit more.
Absolutely.
You know, if it was the old Stoke of Tony Pulis and centre-backs made the brick, then that's a problem. But, you know, if they're going to be more inclined to come on the front foot, then I think that probably plays into Liverpool's hands.
Yeah. Well, I think results change everything when you look towards who you've got coming up in draws or in the league. And we move on to Newcastle, and Newcastle were the first game in a series of games that Liverpool fans have been looking at thinking, this is we've done the hard stuff, these are the games that can, this is the run that can see us steadily climb the table and get into contention for the top four. And at the moment, if you're in contention for the top four, you are. I mean, people have been rowing with each other about title talk and all these things, but if you're in contention for the top four now, you're roughly in contention for potentially being in the title fight. And Newcastle was due to be the first game where we took that next step up the rung of the ladder. Piercy and again, you've been racking up the motorway miles, so from the south coast you headed off to the northeast, and you know, it all went wrong, didn't it?
Yeah, it certainly did. Yeah, and you just wonder whether that those thoughts about this being the start of a much easier run of games maybe seeped into the squad as well, because I think maybe there was a bit of complacency. I think certainly leading into the game, it was probably the first game under Klopp where Liverpool gone into it with everyone thinking this will be a cricket score. This will be, you know, absolute mismatch between a team that's just put six past Southampton against a team humiliated 5-1 at Crystal Palace with McLaren fighting for his job. It was just a wretched day all round, wasn't it? I don't think there was any redeeming features about the performance whatsoever. I think, you know, with the benefit of hindsight, I think Klopp picked the wrong team. I think he'd probably admit that himself. It's difficult, really, because, you know, he was praised for making six changes at Southampton because the fresh legs came in and, you know, it was a real vibrant performance. He made the same amount of changes at Newcastle, and it was so disjointed and, you know, just wretched, really, in all departments. I think the midfield three was a big problem. I just don't think you can have Lucas, Allen and Milner as your three, because there's just not enough creativity and spark there. They struggled to get any kind of control. And then the front three, you know, Jordan Ibe was one of the few who could hold his head high, but, you know, it was a pretty wretched afternoon for Benteke. Really struggled to lead the line. It was interesting that Klopp said afterwards about he couldn't see any offensive pressing, and, you know, he didn't name Benteke, but I think it was pretty obvious where that comment was aimed at. And Firmino as well was a passenger, which was a real disappointment after the strides he's made forward in recent weeks. So, I thought, you know, Newcastle weren't great, and it certainly wasn't much of a game, but they deserved their win because, you know, for the first time under Klopp, Liverpool got outworked. You know, obviously a bit unlucky with the first goal, with the own goal, but no, just one of those, you know, it was a bad day at the office, and you have to move on.
Paul, I know from speaking to you afterwards that you were up there in the away end, that very, very high away end at St James's Park. The Benteke was all the talk of the terraces, wasn't he?
Someone made a great point. Liverpool fans want a great goal scorer, not a scorer of great goals, which, even though Benteke's record is 1-2, I kind of agree with what they were saying, because he's either an 8-4 man or a 1-10. You're not going to get 1-2 consistently throughout the season. So, yeah, not a lot of people were happy with Benteke after the weekend. But, yeah, but on the game in general, it reminded me of Hull 2013-14, there's a lot of similarities. Actually, Skrtel scored an own goal.
That's every other game now, isn't it?
There was a few questions over the starting 11. Moses started. And
Moses and Sterling. Sterling
had a really poor game. And actually, it was actually the making of him. But yeah, that was the start of a few, like a run of games where you're looking at it going, oh, maybe we had, I think, Fulham at home, Cardiff at home, Hull away, you look at 9 points.
West Ham at home, Norwich at home, because the next game was the Suarez 4.
Games like that, and you're like, oh, here's the start of a run before City and Chelsea, just after Christmas, got beat, and it was probably the best thing that happened, sort of, that season, because it changed our fortunes. Maybe the Newcastle defeat might not be the worst thing.
This is the interesting thing, how we react as well, isn't it? Because, you know, there was a good reaction pretty much to the Crystal Palace defeat, wasn't there? You know?
Yeah, definitely. Albeit after an international break. But, it's sort of a massive reaction. You know, it was the Man City game. I don't know if they'll get that. It's a bit weird, you know. I know we'll come on to Sion, but obviously that Sion game is a bit of a, not a red herring, but it's a bit of an anomaly at the moment, because you don't really know who's going to go. It's probably likely going to be a lot of the kids, you would imagine. So all eyes on West Brom in terms of the league. So, you know, it's important, as you say, with those games coming up. You're looking at maybe the Arsenal game at home in mid-January is the next one where you're looking at, and you think Liverpool could struggle there, let's say. You know, it's not to say West Ham away isn't a hard game, or Leicester at home, for example, but the games that I think Liverpool fans are probably going to at least, you know, semi-confident. So it's important to have a reaction to see on West Brom, and also just throughout the Christmas period. Now, games are going to be coming thick and fast, and, you know, I'm sure someone will listen to this and tell me I'm wrong, but it feels to me over Christmas, momentum's a big thing, and you know, if you can get out of that Christmas and New Year period and you assess where you are with 15, 16 games to go, you have a real assessment and a real run of what you want to do. I mean, the thing with, I suppose, in the job that we're in, you can overanalyse sometimes. I think, you know, the Newcastle game in general, it just felt like one of those games. Yeah. You know, I think every manager has them, even early in their reign. You know, I mean, Paul mentions the whole game. I remember Benitez taking a side to Charlton one midweek and losing 2-0. I remember Kenny Dalglish, his start of his second spell, flying in the league, take them to West Ham. Scott Parker plays out of his skin, they lose 3-1. I think these sorts of games happen, and I think it's important for the development of the team. You know, we're talking about learning.
It's that phrase Klopp said, wasn't it? We got beat. Yeah, you know, that's just what happened.
You'll look at how they got beaten, and you know, you'll probably look and, you know, I'd be amazed if Firmino and Benteke play up front together again for a while, you know, unless injuries dictate it. Be amazed if he played that midfield three again, unless injuries. I know his hands were a bit tired with the Chad suspension, hence not fully fit. But you know, you look at it, he'll have seen a lot of things there. It's almost, obviously the 3 points would have been more welcome, but you know, he would have learnt more from that than a straight 1-0 win where everyone's just around 6 or 7 out of 10. He would have learnt a few things there and probably realises, well, I can't do that again.
James, was one of the, there weren't many positives on Sunday, let's not kid ourselves, but I think there was some slight solace for a lot of fans when Klopp came out afterwards and what he said, which was like, you know, we could have got a point, you know, but if there's only one team who deserved to win the game, Newcastle. And I think one of the things that sort of disconnected Brendan Rodgers from the fans, those who he lost, and that was quite a lot by the end, was that he would often come out after a poor performance.
Yeah.
And, you know, he would still find some pieces of the performance to say, you know, that was outstanding, or he was outstanding, or whatever. And it just didn't bear a relation to the game most fans had watched or had spent a lot of money to travel and go and see. He was very honest, Klopp, and I think, yeah, maybe it's easy to be honest when you're flavour of the month and, you know, still maybe in a honeymoon period, but certainly that's the sort of honesty I think fans appreciate and will want to see going forward as well.
Yeah, definitely, yeah. I mean, when you've had a desperately disappointing day like that, the last thing you want to hear is someone trying to pull the wool over your eyes and sugarcoat something, and to be correct, to, you know, to give him his dues, he didn't try and do that. He was very honest with his assessment. It was, you know, he raised a laugh in the press room when he suggested that the linesman had disallowed Moreno's goal just on the basis that Liverpool had been that bad all day, that the linesman must have thought there's no way they could score a goal as good as that. But yeah, you're right. I mean, you know, there's been so many examples in recent years, and, you know, even going back to when Hodgson tried to tell everyone that was Liverpool's best performance of the season. They just lost one of the most miserable Merseyside derbies in recent memory. So yeah, it was. You know, I think that's good because you know, I think it was important for the players to get it straight as well because you know, I think too many of them fell a long, long way short of what's expected of them at St James's Park, and you know, I think some of them will pay the price for that because it was a big opportunity for you know someone like Joe Allen in midfield, first Premier League start of the season, wasn't able to grasp that chance. As we said, Benteke, Firmino, you know, I think you know those players may well, you know, I think they'll pay the price for what happened at St James's when he names that team to face West Brom on Sunday.
Yeah, I mean it's funny. We'll leave Newcastle there because we don't want to dwell on such negativity, but it'd be funny when we go up there next year, we'll go up there with a Liverpool team that's been beat four of the last six times they've been up there, and you can virtually regard it as a bogey ground, yet it's not one of those ones that you know we ever look at the schedule and go, oh, St James is a tough game.
I think it's because when Liverpool win, they win well.
Yeah,
you know,
big wins there.
6-0, 5-1, 3-0 when Allardyce was there. Yeah. I think it's just
the perception of that trip is,
definitely.
Yeah. Brilliant. We'll move on. James, tomorrow you'll be flying off with the team to Sion in Switzerland for a game that Liverpool don't have to win. A draw keeps them top of the group. And a draw, indeed, as far as my man Christian Walls tells me, a draw put both Sion yeah. through in qualification and Liverpool through as top of the group. So should we be lumping the wheelbarrows down to William Hill and going all in on the draw?
I think so much hinges, doesn't it, on the squad that Klopp takes. I think we're certainly expecting a number of key players to be left behind on Merseyside and to rest up ahead of that game against West Brom, because I think that probably becomes even more important on the back of losing at Newcastle. And also, you know, I think you know, you can talk about it, but I don't think it makes a massive difference whether Liverpool win the group or not. I mean, the fact that Sion only need a point to go through, Liverpool need a point to win the group. You know, usually when you see a situation like that, you know, I don't think we're going to be seeing a feast of football. But you know, it would just be interesting to see what team he picks. I think so much will hinge on that. But you know, I think he needs to go with the youngsters because, you know, he's treated the Europa League so far with a huge amount of respect. You know, when you think of you know, it was going nowhere this campaign really before Klopp arrived, and then the way in which he played such a strong team away at Kazan, first English team ever to win over there, wrestled back control of the group, qualified with a game to spare. I think he'll be forgiven if he does field a severely depleted team on Thursday night.
I mean, I personally, this won't be popular enough. It'd probably be unprecedented, but I'd be tempted to send the under-21s and send Michael Beale over to manage them. I just think
Klopp stay behind as well.
Klopp stay behind, stay at Melbourne with the first team. You know, maybe send you know maybe someone like Henderson, Colo. You know, in terms of that seniority.
Yeah, I'm not sure he's. I don't even know if he's allowed to do that if he has to do his UEFA press conference
or
whatever.
I know.
Yes, he get a fine.
Yeah.
You know, it's but you know it is that type of game. You know, it's tongue in cheek that, but yeah. it's for me it's that sort of game for Liverpool where. I've looked at the groups and the permutations and I really don't see any much difference in first and second. Everything's still a little bit wide open in terms of who could be seeded and who couldn't be, but because of that, you don't know until you play the game. So, you know, it's a chance to give the under-21s a little bit of run out, and we've seen that the best club performances have arguably come after a prolonged time on the training field. So it just feels that Sion game's a little bit in the way, to be honest. You know, I wouldn't be surprised if you know the time spent. I understand they're going to the train at Melwood tomorrow, aren't they? On Wednesday morning, Thursday. I don't know if they'll train or not, but I can't see many training sessions revolving around Sion's number nine. I think it'll mainly be you know with one eye on very much on Sunday.
Paul, you're a regular European traveller with the Reds, but you're staying behind this time. Is that indicative of the fact is you know the money can be better spent hopefully in the new year on a more on a more important Europa game.
Yeah, hopefully. I would have liked to have gone over, but circumstances meant that I'm not. But yeah, there's a few appealing ties in that we could have in the latter stages. So yeah, I'll be saving me money for that.
Crossing the Arrow.
And that Europa draw is next Monday.
Next Monday.
So making way for the. The European Championships draw. over the weekend. And we'll conclude with a look towards West Brom. It's set up as a really important game now to try and get back on track. Basically, and as we were talking about that potential momentum going into the Christmas period, where I think Klopp mentioned all his German pals have been texting him, winding him up, going, we're on our holidays. And he's got 10 games until before they're back. It's a hell of a run. Loads of winnable games in there, it looks like, but they all look a bit different on paper now when you're not playing well.
Yeah.
Leicester on Boxing Day, they're playing for fun at the minute. Watford away, good home record, and they've got lads who know how to put it in the back of the net. Every game looks different, and Sunday's game now looks different, because if you got a good result at Newcastle, you're thinking West Brom, we've got to beat them at home. But actually, no, you've got a Pulis team. We know how he'll come to play almost certainly. And those type of displays have been ones that have given us problems in terms of being able to fashion goals to get clear water from them at Anfield.
Yeah, it's no coincidence that Liverpool's most fluent and emphatic displays under Klopp have been on their travels when teams have come out and given them that space to punish them in behind. And you just won't get that when you play West Brom at home. We think Pulis, he's a master, isn't he, at setting up a team defensively. And I'm sure he'll do that. He'll look to frustrate, much in the same way as Swansea did. I think we were all surprised at the way Swansea set up a couple of weeks ago. But it was all about organisation, getting men behind the ball, and then trying to sneak something. And that'll be the way that West Brom play. I think. I saw some extended highlights of their game at Tottenham last weekend, and performed well. They were a decent unit, deserved their point that day. Obviously, Ricky Lambert coming back to Anfield. That'll be one of the themes of the day. I'm sure he'll get a fantastic reception because he could hold his head high. Obviously, it didn't work out quite as he would have wanted his year at the club. I think he was unlucky not to play more than he did. But certainly no one could ever question his attitude or his application and commitment. I think he's guaranteed a massive ovation on his return to the club.
Christian, any side that draws with a very strong Tottenham team at the moment is worthy of respect. And after that loss at Newcastle, you can just imagine a scenario where if West Brom are keeping it tight and it's 0-0 for a long period on Sunday, I can already hear nerves going around Anfield, and you can feel that sense of upset. Hopefully I'm absolutely wrong and we knock in three in the first 10 and it's a stroll, but I think we've got to be prepared that that's going to be a difficult game.
I think it's the worst possible game Liverpool could play after the Newcastle game. Genuinely, Tony Pulis' side at home is the worst possible game, because you think about how Liverpool struggled against these sorts of teams, and now they're coming up against the prototype, the fellow who drew up the blueprint. So, I mean, an early goal dictates this game, won't it? Liverpool can somehow get that early goal. In a way, I say it's the worst game, but also, it's these sorts of games where Klopp has to plan, hopefully he finds the solution to how Liverpool come out the blocks like they did in 2013-14. Obviously he's not trying to replicate that season, but he is going to take something from that season. It's the way Liverpool will turn up against these sides and they'll be 2-0 up within 20 minutes and then the game just opens up for them. He hasn't quite managed to find that formula at home yet. I suppose the more games against these sorts of sides, the more he'll think about it and the more likely it is to find that solution. But yeah, I mean, an early goal is important. The Swansea game was racked with nerves, and if he can get an early goal, if he can find a way for Liverpool to be comfortable and out of sight, if you will, on 60, I'm sure he'd take that. But it's a pure side, isn't it? It's historically, he really comes and frustrates Liverpool teams, and I wouldn't be surprised if they do it again, to be honest.
I'm just hoping it's not going to be a battle of the baseball caps on the sideline between Pulis and Klopp. This has been your Liverpool FC podcast, a mixed week for the Reds. Thanks very much for listening.
Nu de Samsung S9 Plus. Voor een genadeloos lage prijs, check tele2.nl voor de beste deal voor jou. Niet omdat het moet, maar omdat het kan.